I want to tell you about 70 Million, a Peabody nominated podcast about criminal justice and jail reform from Lantigua, Williams and Co. Each week, a team of reporters around the country chronicles how communities are enacting criminal justice reform in their neighborhoods. The show gets right to the heart of the social upheaval we're experiencing, and how communities all over the U.S. are taking action. Listen now at 70millionpod.com. It's the number 70millionpod.com, or search for 70 million in your podcast app.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, September 25th, 2020. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. On the program today, Alex Perrine from The New Republic and the podcast, The Politics of Everything. And David Feldman from the waiting room of his therapist's office. Meanwhile, Democrats gear up for legal battles over the elections. And will he or won't he? Schumer pressured to slow McConnell's roll. Polls have Biden up in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Nevada, and Michigan. Down in Iowa. Kana and Kennedy look to introduce a bill to the House to limit the Supreme Court justices' terms to 18 years. Coronavirus' cases top 7 million as the Midwest surges. Republican Senator Rick Scott proposes a bill to stop counting mail-in ballots in the middle of the counting of mail-in ballots. The DOJ searches high and low to make mail-in balloting look nefarious. And a federal judge orders the census to keep counting, despite the fact Trump wants to stop. Meanwhile, in the House, frontline Democrats calling Pelosi to forge a COVID relief compromise. And the EPA says full steam ahead, allowing pesticides that are neurotoxins to children. A Louis DeJoy lawsuit exposes internal documents showing that top U.S. Postal Service officials ordered the policy shifts, which slowed the mail. And lastly, congratulations, Donald Trump opens the Tongass National Forest to loggers. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I want to start off with my deepest apology. It is Friday, and as you can see, if you are watching via YouTube or Twitch or Twitter or Facebook, that I am not wearing a soft-collared shirt. I am wearing a slightly stiffer collared shirt than I would normally on a Friday. So
our institutions are collapsing.
It's true. Our institutions are collapsing. And I don't want you to normalize this. I promise you. I won't make this mistake again. I have pre-tape afterwards. And so I want to apologize to everyone who is in some way disappointed. I will do better and make sure that next week I have a actual soft collared shirt on. And maybe to make it up to you, I may even contemplate wearing a t-shirt. So probably with a hoodie or something like that. We will get to that. But let's start with this. Ruth Bader Ginsburg the first, I think the first woman, at the very least, the first Jewish woman, but I think the first woman to lay in state. Is that right?
That's correct.
And that's sort of shocking, frankly. But be that as it may, she was, I guess they had her casket draped with a flag near the Supreme Court, or right, I guess, in the front of the Supreme Court, which is, I don't know, just a block or so from the U.S. Capitol. And Donald Trump went to go pay his respects, and the crowd that had assembled to, I guess, celebrate Ruth Bader Ginsburg's life and achievements, they paid their respects to Donald Trump. Here's that clip. All the times you'd like to see the look on his face, he's wearing a mask.
I've seen enough. I've seen enough.
What was it they sang? They were saying, four more years.
Four more years. Thank you. They love me.
They really love me. You know, it is petty and really ultimately worthless to celebrate moments like this. But I'm going to, because I know it hurt his feelings. And I'm going to cop to not caring about that.
I think as a historical artifact, it's also interesting. The very first woman lies in state. I mean, 100 years from now, if they watch that video, they're going to hear this otherworldly howl from the crowd off screen, just trying to get this guy out.
That's actually I think that's a great point. I mean, this is like a moment like that could end up, I mean, depending on, you know, how things go in the next really 150 days, because that I really do think is going to implicate history for decades. That could be one of those things that, like, this is what, you know, in the history books, this is one of those sort of touchstones that they use to sort of describe where people were at this point in terms of the polarization and, I guess maybe something like that happened during Nixon, maybe the Nixon era, but I mean, I can imagine it happening, but not really at a such an institutional event as the display of a casket of a Supreme Court justice. Right. During the Nixon era, I can imagine that there were opportunities for people to jeer at Nixon and boo him, et cetera, et cetera. But I can't imagine in that era also that people would have come. And I'm trying to think of who was sitting on the court at that time to one of the Supreme Court justices, funerals or wakes or memorials, and actually go earnestly. Do you know what I mean? That's what I think is interesting about this. The people who were, are for historians' sake, the people who are sitting there booing the president of the United States are not people who, you know, necessarily have a problem with authority or, the institutions of our country. And I think that is sort of what is unique about what we just watched there. Plus, also, man, they really have to stuff his face in a mask.
It's pretty tight.
It's that's where my chin is. Wherever
not
the mask
flattering. Lies,
that is where my chin is. Wow. I know. That's juvenile. It is juvenile, folks. And I want to be clear about that because it is. And I know it. And I don't have a problem with that. These days, as you know, we have many ways to stay in touch with family, even when we can't visit them in person. However, despite current events that are going on, you also want to basically, you know, you could do it through in the moment and this and that, but to sort of like develop an intimate understanding of folks, something like StoryWorth is invaluable. StoryWorth, you can connect with loved ones everywhere. You can learn family history that you never knew. For those of us who have parents who are getting up there a little bit and, you know, start to have trouble remembering things, this is, it's an invaluable, you know, a service makes it sound a little bit cold, but it really is, it's amazing. Basically, what they do is they send questions, in my case, to my mom and my dad every week. They don't have to write much. And it's not, you know, these are not hard technical questions. I'm trying to think like what, well, let's check and see what we got for this week was, okay. For my dad, it was, who was the most positive influence on you as a child? For my mom, it was, what was the one thing you wish you'd known before going to college? Both of these seem like innocuous questions, but my experience is that you ask these innocuous questions of your parents, and then they just start rambling about stuff, but they write it down, and it's great. You get some really interesting answers, and I sort of decided this week that I was going to do this for myself, for my kids, which had never really occurred to me before. But, you know, now that I'm still lucid, I figure I should do it. And I don't know how lucid I'll be for much longer. Every week, StoryWorth emails your family members, like I say, with different story prompts, questions you never thought to ask, like the ones I just mentioned, but, you know, things like what have been some of your life's greatest surprises, or, you know, what's the scariest thing you've ever done, the riskiest thing you've ever done, the most obvious thing you've ever done, the most out of character thing you've ever done. Then they respond. You read the weekly stories. You could talk to your parents about it, or, I mean, it doesn't have to be a parent, whatever. You go back, get some clarification in some instances. And after 1 year, StoryWorth, they compile every answered question. And if you want some photos that you choose into a beautiful keepsake book that's shipped for free. So now you can connect with family and discover untold stories with StoryWorth. Get started right away without the need for shipping by going to StoryWorth.com/majority. You get $10 off your first purchase. That's StoryWorth.com/majority and $10 off your first purchase. Check it out. StoryWorth.com/majority. Also, today's program is brought to you by Sunset Lake CBD. Sunset Lake CBD at sunsetlakecbd.com. You know the deal with this these guys. They were a farm up in Burlington, Vermont. A dairy farm. They were providing Ben and Jerry's with dairy. And then they decided to diversify. They started to grow hemp. They got involved with the University of Vermont to learn and operate with regenerative agricultural practices. They're CBD, 100% pesticide free, 100% organic. You can check their website for all sorts of certification about what's in the stuff. And I mean, the bottom line is, we were all CBD skeptics around here. I don't know, Brendan, were you a CBD skeptic? I know that Matt and I were, but for our different reasons. Matt, because it didn't get him. buzzed in the way he wanted to.
Well, it gave me a big headache when I had it at Venice Beach in California. And
that was a really like seminal period of your life, wasn't it?
Well, it was also a problem because that was the only thing I bought to smoke when I was in Los Angeles, and that it was ended up being a CBD spliff may have upset me a little bit too. But yeah, so I was anti-CBD. I thought it was all pointless. And then this stuff is actually really good, and I enjoy mixing it.
That's for the smokables. And I have been using the tinctures for, I don't know, a couple months now. And it's fantastic. Helps me sleep. I've used it at other times. Frankly, there was a couple of days over the summer when we were dealing with Michael that I would hit it a little bit, and it was helpful. Very stressful period of time. When the kids get me going, I will also use it. But they have tinctures, they have gummy bears, they have a salve with arnica, which I've mentioned I've used on my eczema. It's not for that, but it worked for me. But I've heard other people say that it's great for their arthritis, et cetera, et cetera. And they have CBD-infused coffee. So check it out, sunsetlakecbd.com. They're fans of the show. They want their coupon code to be left is best. One word, left is best. You get 20% off. So check it out, sunsetlakecbd.com. And just remember, it is your support that makes the show possible. When you become a member, you get the support the free show, then you get the member show, and then you get the whole show commercial free too. So although if you're a member, you should still check out sunsetlakecbd.com. 20% off, left is best. Do we have Alex Perrine?
Yep, here he comes.
Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome back to the program. It's always a pleasure. The host of, or co-host of The Politics of Everything, the staff writer at The New Republic, Alex Perrine.
Hi, Sam. How are you?
Good. Did you put everything that you have in your apartment behind you today?
Yes, I did. I gathered all of my belongings.
I was going to say,
and I placed them behind me today.
Maybe it's a new angle that you have with the camera.
I have a new camera, and it captures too much of my room.
It looks good. It's a high quality camera. It's like, there's a trophy. Did you win a trophy?
Is there a trophy back there?
What would you what do you look at? Like, what would you have won a trophy for?
I don't recall having won a trophy for anything.
I was going to say, you're looking pretty hard. I mean, you're implying that there would be a trophy there. All right, let's. Well, there was a couple of things. First off, let me note this. I think you were on the program, I don't know, what was it, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago?
Something like that.
And you had done, if I'm not mistaken, a podcast, I think earlier that week, or about sort of like this doomsday scenario for mm-hmm. the election.
Mm-hmm.
And Bart Gellman, Jeffrey Toobin have written pieces that essentially outline what you guys had talked about, if I recall correctly, right? This notion of faithless electors, or electors who are hijacked, if you will, by Republican state legislators. And they did some Gellman, at least at the very least, I have only browsed the Toobin piece, but Gellman spoke to Republicans in Pennsylvania who are basically saying, well, you know, we're not going to tell you, but yeah, we've been talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
It was
scary.
Alarming. It was alarming to see that attached to people's names on the record.
I mean, on some level, if they're going to do this, right, they're going to have to, the way that they do it is going to be in the light of day.
Yeah.
And they're going to, you know, by going on the record and talking about it, on some level, they're, I don't want to say normalizing it, but they're
setting the groundwork, right?
They're setting the groundwork.
Yeah.
And they're saying like, yeah, this is something that this is what, you know, what we're talking about is not, you know, something that you can't say out loud. This is part of the Constitution. So of course, we can, do this.
Yeah. And I was talking to, my friend and coworker, Libby Watson, earlier, and, you know, the Jake Tapper did a tweet yesterday that was like, well, you know, congressional Republicans are trying to send a message by signaling that send a message to the White House by signaling they will respect the results of the November 3rd election. And Libby was like, if they steal the election, it's not going to be Donald Trump goes on TV holding a Tommy gun saying like, the election's off, we're calling off the election. Like, they're going to do it with lawyers. They're going to do it with state legislatures and lawyers.
Yes.
And it'll be by the book.
It's going to be by the book. Although I bet that if they need to push some time limits, that's where we see sort of like the Proud Boys come in.
Yeah.
Like, look, you have a certain number of days before those electors have to be chosen by the states, right? It's mid-December, essentially. If you, and you can get extensions and whatnot, but let's just call it mid-December for the sake of argument. If you can chew up 3 or 4 or 5 days in November with just like, oh, they've locked themselves to the doors or they're keeping people out and they can't physically count the ballots and whatnot. All right, they go to jail for a couple of days or something like that. Maybe they don't. And they've bought 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then with delays in court cases and I mean, this is the way, this is what went down in Florida on some level too.
Yeah.
You could see multiple of these.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think that's what is like the scary, but most the scary, but realistic idea of what could go wrong is basically like, repeat of Florida in multiple places with, like, militias and Proud Boys taking the place of the Brooks Brothers riot.
Right. Right. So, all right. Let's just start with this. And I want to get to, you wrote a piece about McConnell and Ginsburg. And in some ways, you know, like that drama, if you will, or that narrative is parallel to the one that we're talking about, right? Which is there is a will to power.
Yeah.
With Donald Trump, when we talk about Donald Trump, when we talk about the Republicans, I mean, this is really important for people to understand this. And we can talk a little bit about, like, you know, how deep that understanding is. Because I remember, I am so old that I remember when Paul Ryan was talking about how there was something fishy about all the ballots that were coming in from California in 2016, you know, late, like they're counting them late because they've been mailed in. Right. And he was saying there's something fishy here. This is an election they won, incidentally, or at least, you know, we're crowned the winner. And so people should understand that what we're talking about here is a party, not just Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. He can't do this without the party enabling him. And in fact, not even enabling, like beyond midwifing. I mean, to stretch that metaphor, like, impregnating him on some level is really their participation in this. But so getting back to this, how like legit is this concern? Because I'm seeing trolls on the left and the right saying, you know, calm down. This is, you know, this like this is like there's this. I appreciate the disdain for West Wing, but yeah. I don't feel like this is not a West Wing reaction in my mind.
No. I mean, I don't know. I just tend to think that if it's close enough that stealing it is viable, they will go for it. And I don't really see why they wouldn't. I mean, right. Like, I think if they see a lane where it looks like they'll be able to, like, try it and it might work. I think they're just going to try it.
What happens if he wins that way? I mean, like, if he wins, I mean, is there a, let me put it this way. Is there a material difference between Donald Trump getting more votes than Joe Biden or, you know, getting within, let's say, 500,000 votes and winning the Electoral College like he did, you know, more or less like in 2016? Is there a material difference between that and he wins because Pennsylvania decides like the Republicans there decide like, there is no election results. So we're just gonna have to choose and we choose Trump.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't
know. Is there a real difference in terms of like what it says for our future?
That's it's hard to say. I mean, I don't know. Like, you have to get into the... A lot depends on how the other party responds, I think. And I've been sort of wondering, you know, we've been reading for a while now about stuff like the war game scenarios that people are doing, where they're trying to figure out like how different groups would respond. And we saw Hillary Clinton telling Joe Biden, don't concede like Al Gore did. But like, I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine that the Democrats have begun planning for anything that doesn't just involve hiring like election lawyers to argue before a Supreme Court that might be dominated by an additional conservative justice.
Right. Well, okay. I don't know if you're answering the question I'm asking. So
oh, yeah.
A little bit clearer. Like, I mean, because I think, you know, we can get to, you know, what the Democrats are doing, what they can do. And I would agree with you. I think the delta there is probably too big for our purposes. But I'm saying 6 months from after the election.
Oh, yeah.
Donald Trump is inaugurated and he has won because the Pennsylvania Republicans, whatever.
Or maybe it went to the House and then the crazy House vote, which is like the state, you know, the states get a single vote, basically. You know, I could see that. Yeah.
Right. And depending on who has won the who has won the delegate numbers there. Mm-hmm. So in other words, like Democrats control the House because California and New York.
Yeah.
Have so many Congress people.
Yeah.
And
that's not the way we talked to Michael Kazin about this on the podcast.
The way it works when it goes to the House. Then all of a sudden it's like the Senate.
Almost. Yeah, exactly. And then it's like the California delegation gets a vote and the Wyoming delegation gets a vote.
That's where the issue is. So, but let's say they win that way. Like in terms of what it means for the rest of the, you know, for the country for like 4 years from now, does that make a material difference? Because let me say where I'm going with this. I think if Donald Trump becomes president again, because of stuff like this, because the Pennsylvania, they were able to sort of, you know, prevent the actual elected elections from being the vote that is cast, because Senate, the states can pick their electors in any way they choose, really. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that Donald Trump becomes president. The idea, it's almost like, you know, when you're committing a crime, if you get your buddies involved and they're all accomplices, their behavior after that takes place is going to change because they are tied to you and it's almost like all bets are off.
Yeah.
As opposed to if he wins with just, you know, he won the most electoral votes.
If he wins the same way he won last time, right?
Yeah. Then there, you know, then there's room for people to be on the other side of him, even, you know, within that party on some level. But the more people he gets involved in this sort of power grab, they've already chosen which side they're on and they're going to do whatever they need to do to maintain that power.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, this has been part of the scary thing about the way quote unquote normal Republicans have tied themselves to him so far is that exactly when you breach some line of ethical conduct, like you're on the other side of it now, like you've already said, I will go this far and you sort of can't go back after that point. You know, you say, this is what I have been willing to do to maintain power. And like, obviously, like at that point, like what won't I do to maintain power?
Right. Right. Cause you can't go back. You know that there could be, some type of retribution. I mean, so what, all right. So I have been reading about the same thing that you have in terms of the, you know, they've assembled lawyers. I don't know how coordinated it is, frankly, but my understanding is that there's a lot of lawyers out there that the Democrats are assembling, a lot of different teams, et cetera, et cetera. I know there are things, and I want people to I almost feel obligated every time I talk about this now, to remind people to go vote as early as possible.
Yeah.
In many states, you can vote in person right now.
I think voting early in person wherever you can is the best move in much of the country.
If you go to vote.org, early-voting-calendar, you can find out what the situation is in your state. Monitor, find out, tell your friends. Like, the, you know, people keep writing me, like, what can we do? You start there. And then the other thing that you can do is if you can be a poll watcher, Google, how do I become a poll watcher, and go do that. Because supposedly the Republicans are sending out tens of thousands of poll watchers.
Yeah.
And I imagine they're going to be intimidating. You can also go to powerthepolls.org. Oh, that's how you can get to be a poll worker. Powerthepolls.org. And you can go to protectthevote.net for more information. We'll put these links there. So, I mean, you know, because we have these conversations, people are like freaking out, as they should be, frankly. I think that's legit. And, you know, I want to give them an opportunity is to like, here's something that you can do. What else do you think that Democrats could do besides the lawyers, though?
I mean, I don't know. That is the central question. I think, so there's, I don't know, because it's like, what can Democrats do? Well, what can different Democrats do? I think the Biden campaign has said, basically, we think Trump is using this kind of talk to depress turnout. And I don't think that's true, but I think that's probably savvy enough for them to say. And they should just do what you just did and tell people to go vote in person early. Although I know they're still doing mail a lot. For me, it feels like there's going to be like Democrats are not the ones responsible for organizing mass demonstrations on the street. And so it will be a question of whether they discourage that or not. I feel like it's like after it happens is right. The real question.
How much do they embrace it? Yeah. And how much do they say,
like, everyone calm down? Cause I think that they have a real, like, considering the age of some of them, a genuine 60s hangover fear of being seen as being responsible for unrest that they will have to fight against, or they might not want to fight against it. But I think that too many of them, that still drives a lot of their behavior. But I don't know. It's like extremely hard to
game this out.
Yeah, to game it out and to say, like, well, what does December and January look like? It's extremely hard to figure that out right now.
It hadn't occurred to me, but I think that is really that is one of the central questions is what will their response be? I mean, and will they help grow it? I mean, I'm just trying to think, like, you know, what was going on with Occupy?
Yeah.
It took a while, but ultimately, like, they all just sort of like, yeah, they were semi encouraging of it.
Yeah.
Semi.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then not so much, but
you know, I think their attitude towards mass demonstration and activism now is kind of summed up in the Women's March stuff, where they actively encouraged it and then like sort of wanted it to be demobilized while they went back to their regular work of
right,
like, you know, passing message bills.
Let's talk about the Ginsburg seat, which is not unrelated, right? I mean,
yeah.
Donald Trump really wants there to be 9 justices before the election, presumably because he doesn't want to have to rely on Roberts, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's my sense of this. Yeah. You know, I don't know if he is right to be suspect of Roberts or not. And if there are 9 justices, we really won't ever know because, you know, all of a sudden it's a free vote for Roberts.
Yeah.
You may want to maintain some type of, like, you know, legacy position, I guess, of, like, you know, on the better side of angels or whatever it is. So if there's 9 justices, we won't know whether he was right to doubt Roberts. But I can understand why you'd want an insurance plan if you were about to do something really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so we know why Donald Trump wants to seat that justice, right? He wants that. He wants a crony on the court. You had a piece where you talked about Claire McCaskill responding, doing exactly what we just talked about in terms of, like, you know, how Democrats will react to this. Like, everybody calm down, take a breath.
Take a breath.
You're all just imagining that the Republicans don't believe in institutions and, you know, like, operate like they're crazy people or that they're ideologues who are megamaniacal in that respect. Everybody's got to calm down. I know these people, she's saying. I know how to get elected in the Midwest, except for when I don't.
Yeah.
I am just stunned by that. And I think I saw the exchange that you had with her on Twitter that led to this this piece. But just, like, lay it out for us. Like, my first reaction was, he is going to keep, and by he, I mean McConnell, is going to keep the seat open and vote in the lame duck.
Yeah.
Because fully one quarter of Republican voters said that they voted because of that empty seat in the Supreme Court for Donald Trump. That's, I mean, an enormous number of people.
Yeah.
And so give me your assessment.
You know, you explained why Trump wants a ninth justice now. And I think McConnell has partly for exactly the reason you just said. I think McConnell has his interest lies in not having a ninth justice before the election. And I think that the Claire McCaskill, her argument last Friday was that, you know, McConnell, it will not want to do something so provocative and potentially damaging before the election because it will hurt the reelection chances of a few vulnerable Republican senators. And, you know, he wants to protect his majority. But then, like, what is his motivation for keeping the seat open after the election? Right. Like, and it's, I think that he will be much more motivated by,
I should say that she said, because then it will jeopardize some senators in 2022.
And, yeah.
What?
Yes. And as I said, the idea that he would avoid doing something that is part of his, like, political goals, that, like, one of his stated political goals, the idea that he would avoid accomplishing one of his goals because it might potentially be controversial years from now is what you would think McConnell would do if he were a Democrat.
Exactly. Exactly. Like,
if McConnell were a Democrat, I could see him saying, I better not fill this seat. It might make someone mad at me 2 years from now.
Right. I hate to actually pursue my primary directive because somebody could get upset and I could lose my power and then my ability to follow my prime directive.
Yes, exactly. I mean,
the logic is just, well, first of all, it is a perfect illustration of what is problematic about McCaskill. But I mean, she's gone now, but like Pelosi, like Schumer. I mean, this is the Democratic establishment far more interested in maintaining power than actually deploying their power for the purpose that they ostensibly have their power.
I think this is the main problem with specifically this set of congressional Democrats. And it's definitely not like all Democrats. It's this set of congressional Democrats.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah, they believe the point of amassing power is to protect this particular collection of people in their seats, right? Like, that's what they are doing it for. They are saying, like, everything we do is to make sure this group of people continues to win elections.
I mean, how many, since 2006, how many Republican leaders have we had in the House?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, we had the wrestling coach who apparently was sued for having molested children. John Boehner, who allowed you know, his caucus to you know, vote that Barack Obama didn't, you know, wasn't from America. Paul Ryan. We've had McCarthy. I mean, have we had more than four?
I think that's it. Was Cantor in there? He was just a
Cantor was a whip, yeah, but I'm saying just whip, absolute, like, top leadership.
Yeah.
There may have been a fifth that I can't remember. And we've had one.
Yeah.
One. Yeah. In the Democrat. One.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's pretty nuts.
And then, you know, and then like, I mean, on the, on
we
the,
have a very, very ossified Democratic leadership.
And, you know, it comes in with, I mean, God, did you, you I'm sure that you saw the Feinstein story too, right? Where they're like, you know, because of seniority, because we do everything according solely to seniority and nothing else, she is like going
she's
to be,
gonna the, be running the judiciary,
running the judiciary committee. And we're like, we're a little worried because she's nearly 90 and seems like she might not know what's going on.
Right. Right.
It's like, it's astonishing.
it's interesting because, you know, when you were talking about it depends on what the Democrats' reaction is to the, if Trump does, you know, sort of steal the election in that way, or wins by extra electoral means. The notion that that becomes the platform for like an AOC, like where the Democratic establishment is just sort of again, like, well, we, there's no point in rocking the boat. We have to work with these people, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That becomes, I mean, you know, somebody's going to fill that vacuum.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's AOC or if it's other people, but like that's, you know, that's going to happen at one point. I don't know when that will be. It may be, you know, depending on what this election turns out, but a dynamic like that is going to happen. And so we've got this situation where, you know, the Democrats just seem to be completely befuddled now. And so, all right. So, and they cannot even imagine that Mitch McConnell would do this, but let's go back to McConnell.
Yeah. Well,
so
yeah.
Is it worth it to him to fill the seat? Like, I don't think he's going to try. Well, the only reason why he wouldn't, why it seems to me why he would fill the seat now as opposed to after the election is because he's going to do it when he can.
Right. Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
If he can't do it now, second position is fill it after the election, if he can. But he's not going to aim for after the election because he's not sure that he can then. If he has the votes now, he's going to do it. And I think he has the votes now.
I think he does it when he has the votes, absolutely. And that very well could be before the election. And I think, like, you know, you could say, you know, he will allow Collins and Murkowski to vote against it. And because Collins is, like, allowed to vote no when her vote is not necessary, I think she still could cause her the election, but that's what like the McCaskill brain would say. It's going to hurt Collins. Even if she votes no, it's going to hurt her. I mean, but he's like, yeah, but then we will own the Supreme Court for a generation.
We will have
three, we will get what we wanted.
I will have seated three Supreme Courts and about 200 other federal courts, and I will go down in the history books.
But I joked on Twitter. I was like the scenario I was imagining, if just out of pure cynicism, was Collins loses election and then votes to confirm in December. That's what I was like in the lame duck. Then she's like, screw you on the way out.
But I mean, that's not inconceivable, but
no. I mean, no, I think you're totally right on the timing. And I think like it's, I mean, I think it's foolish to, yeah, it's like he does it when he has the votes. He might have them now. If they get shellacked in the election, like, of course they're going to do it on the way out the door.
Well, they're going to try. And I think the odds of them being able to do it under those circumstances are less than them being able to do it now. And that's why he's going to try and do it now. I think like his number one agenda is, and he's willing to bet the whole farm on this because, well, you know, I mean, I guess he could, you know, if Trump wins, then it's like, he still protected his legacy. Like his legacy etched in stone. These are all lifetime appointments.
Yeah.
And if he loses the Senate now, after 2 years, he'll get it back. And if he loses the Senate and Trump's still president, it's not like they're going to be able to do anything.
No, exactly.
And so, although I guess maybe you could impeach.
That would be the question.
And then you get, and then Mike Pence is there for the next, and then you get the Senate back in 2022. And that's his thinking. So let me ask you this. There was a piece in The Intercept And people have made this public. I mean, really what's going on here is people are trying to pressure Chuck Schumer to show even the slightest indication that he has a spine, even the slightest. And the fact is, if Mitch McConnell wants to do this, I don't think the Democrats can stop him, but they can slow him down.
Yeah.
And you could theoretically slow him down to the extent where it has to happen in the lame duck session.
Yeah.
And again, you know, Collins, maybe she votes for, you know, or I don't know, maybe there's a couple of people, maybe Mitt Romney, if Biden wins big.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mitt Romney, who is, I hope maybe, you should know, an incredible amount of integrity. If Mitt Romney, you know, sees that Biden won, maybe then he says, well, we shouldn't do it in a lame duck. You know, who knows? These are all wild cards. I still think the Republicans would probably do it, but it's less of a sure thing than doing it now, because they can't afford to not do it now if they have the opportunity.
Yeah.
And if McConnell decides to push. So there's a memo that's been laid out by a bunch of, like, I don't know, former Senate staffers and that has been leaked or made public anyways, as a way of pressuring Chuck Schumer. And it goes through the entire, you know, like every, I could read all of it to everybody and we would understand, like, you know, 1/8 of it, because it's all like, you bring a motion and then you, you know, recommit it. And then, you know, it's all these parliamentary Robert's Rules of Orders, you know, who knows what. But the bottom line is you can slow stuff down.
Right.
You can't do a, you know, Mr. Smith goes to Washington and stop the whole thing. But you can slow it down. You can make it highly inconvenient. And there's two or three things that come with that. One is you keep incumbent Republican senators, and there's more of them running than there are Democrats. You
keep them in Washington.
You keep them in Washington. That makes it hard for them to run in their states. You signal to the Democratic base. And the base in this instance, I'm not talking about left, you know, I'm not talking about, like, you know, sort of necessarily, they tend to be to the left, I think, of the party, but they're not, you know, I'm not talking about, like, sort of, you know, the activist base, although you do. You signal to all of them that, like, this is important.
Right. Your most loyal voters, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, you know how we were talking about fixing the Voting Rights Act, Section 5? Well, 6-3 justices may make it a little harder for us to come up with the, you know, to thread that needle.
Yeah.
You're signaling to them. I mean, there are fights that are worth losing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, again, in advance of an election where more Republicans are up than Democrats in the Senate, like, you should be telling your base every day, like, we are fighting as hard as we can. Like, we are actually trying to win. We are trying to defeat the other side.
Let's talk briefly about the absence of that.
Well, you know, I mean, they have such a strange relationship to their base, because they just seem to strongly prefer, like, just like, not even they talk about in terms of electoral strategy, but it seems to just, like, actually be a sort of emotional preference for reaching out to quote unquote swing voters. Like, I think it's still pointed as, like, what we have to do to win, but I think it really is like, I think they don't really like, and we're not talking about the far left here. We're talking about normal liberal loyal Democratic voters, and I think they don't like firing them up. They're always saying calm down. They're always saying, like, chill out and calm down, like normal Democratic voters. Like, don't get so worked up. Like, we got to reach out to, you know, we got to reach out to Bloomberg guys or whatever.
Yeah, I agree with you that I think it is more emotional. It's not necessarily based in fact. I mean, on some level, there was a thing that, like, radio hosts do when we go on television and are asked to comment. And I include myself. I know I've done this in the past. I don't do it as much as a lot of the old talk radio guys, but it's always like this. Well, I'll tell you what my audience is concerned about. And they're concerned about X, Y, or Z. And, you know, and coincidentally, it also happens to be exactly
those are my concerns as well. Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's what it is, right? I mean, it's like there's this relationship like, oh, this is what we need to do to win. Now, we don't have any data to support this. And we have a lot of actually data to show that sometimes it doesn't work out. But that was because of extraneous factors.
Yeah.
Russia or whatever it is. Comey sometimes is right. Sometimes that is. But that is. And that's what we're dealing with. I'm a little bit concerned with this. Like, you know, like the Supreme Court thing. I think Joe Biden is running the perfect Joe Biden campaign.
Yeah.
He's on message. The whole thing where he's like, I'm not going to take the bait on packing the court or this and that. And I'm like, good for you, because there is no point right now.
He should not be making headlines he should not be making headlines that are like Joe Biden promises to be equally extreme or whatever. Like he's not giving them like the,
he's running the perfect Joe Biden campaign, which is to basically not be here. If you look over here, all you're going to see is like a guy who,
every now and then I see a picture of him wearing a mask, giving a firefighter a pizza.
Yeah, exactly. That's basically it. Like, yeah, he's a guy who give a firefighter a pizza. There's nothing. The problem is, and you know, we've talked about this, I think, in the past, is that, and you're just making it a referendum on Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. That's all well and good. But if you have, there's two things, it seems to me, that can throw that off the rails. And that is events outside of the race that implicate the race, like Supreme Court dying, like, I don't know what, you know, maybe an attack on Iran or something to that effect or whatever it is, there's, you need a different voting group than you thought you did because of inhibition as to the people's ability to vote.
Yeah.
And they are relying on Trump disdain, which is fine, all well and good. But, you know, we see stuff like there was a poll that came out. Black folk under the age of like 35 or something are just...
Yeah, just completely like alienated from it.
Completely alienated from it. Like, and I don't know what to believe in terms of Joe Biden's Latino numbers, but there's definitely some indication that he is not, you know, pushing as hard as he should for these folks. And he can't, right? Because his strategy is to just like be the guy who drops off the pizza.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like I've been. I don't mean, you know, who knows how accurate these polls are, but his numbers with old whites are just shocking to me. Biden, like they
shockingly good.
Yeah, shockingly good. Which I didn't think in the post Obama era a Democrat would ever see numbers like that again. I thought Obama was the end of that, and I'm like, I don't know. But then, like exactly like you said, on the other side of that, like, there's not. I don't think he can do. Like, what can he do? Like,
right.
He is who he is.
Exactly. That's the thing, is that we have sort of like chosen, you know, we took a highway. We took the off ramp.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the Democratic voters voted this way, and we got off the ramp and we went on to a different highway. And there's just no exits between here and the election.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, people whose politics are a little closer to yours or mine were saying this last year and saying this into the beginning of this year, like, you know, like, this is the choice you're making, right? Like, this, some of these candidates electrify particular demographics and other ones completely turn them off. And then once you make that choice, like, you decided it. So this is, you're in this lane now.
Right. And there's only so much that we can do with this. Although, I'm going to be talking, to Aaron Kleiman from, I can't remember his name, his organization. I always forget it. Future Now. Thank you. And he, you know, he's talking about state races that you can support. I know there's people are talking about, there's a list I have here somewhere of like 6 or 7 swing state Senate and House races that good to support because, you know, to get people jazzed up about supporting someone they really like that will have, you know, sort of like a downstream help for the entire ticket.
Like the that would be a coordinated campaign to highlight the most, like to highlight the best down ballot candidates like nationwide. That would be I think the only way you could possibly juice some of that vote that's missing right now is if you introduced people to exciting them.
Yes. And I think there are different organizations doing that, but there's not, you know, I don't know. We
it's
don't
not, have right. it's, people are, I know people who are trying to do that, but it's not like, there's not like a sort of coordinated national democratic strategy around that.
Right. And there's also, I mean, you know, and to be fair, there's no Koch brothers because that's what the Koch brothers
that's
would
what
be
they
doing.
Do. Yeah. They and, create rising stars and they fund them and they, you know, these guys come out of Republican finishing schools, like ready to be introduced to Republican voters, you know, and people are funding them every step of their career.
Exactly. And they're funding the sort of the movements around them that would do what we were just talking about. Like we've created an organization, America, 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 for, you know, that is going to isolate these races and pour billions of dollars into them. So Alex, I know you said you weren't going to make any predictions. I get that. And I know that's important. Let me put it this way. When do you think the election will be over? just to make it clear, we're not going to know who's president on November 3rd.
Yeah.
And everybody who is listening to the sound of my voice is going to freak out.
Yeah.
At 11 p.m. on November 3rd.
Yeah, we're all going to be like on looking at our phones. Like,
right? Isn't that what they call it? The red mirage.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to be
where Trump is going to be up, you know, by 300 electoral votes. But when are we going to find out that's the prediction I want from you.
I think like 2 weeks later.
Oh, you got to be
I think that's like that. I'm saying 2 weeks later if it's abnormal-ish, no funny stuff. But then like if it becomes a Supreme Court thing, I have no idea.
I want to jump. Well, honestly, I want to jump through the Zoom right now and strangle you. What am I supposed? Let me ask you this then. What am I supposed to do every day on the show while we're waiting to find out?
I don't know. I mean, I think there will be plenty to talk about. We just won't know who the president
is. Sitting here, it's just going to be like, this is, can you describe your anxiety today? Yeah, no, very much like yesterday.
Yeah. I don't know.
Alex Breen, be prepared to be the guest on this program every single day.
I'll come on every day.
November 3rd. Yes.
It'll be like Nightline. It'll be great.
Exactly. All we're going to do is we're going to see in your Zoom, and you're just going to be rearranging different things.
There'll be more and more items behind me every time.
The bike is going to switch over to the bedside. The bed's going to switch over here. You're going to have, hopefully folks in our audience will send Alex Breen some trophies. He deserves
it. Yeah. Thank you.
Alex Breen, folks, check out The Politics of Everything. And of course, go subscribe to The New Republic. We desperately need more reporting and great writing in this era. And, you know, while they're still allowed to roam freely, you might as well support them. Alex, thanks so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, folks. We're not going to waste any time because I'm getting my phone is blowing up from our next guest. Let's see. Here he is. I'm on hold. Where are you? Pick up. Ladies and gentlemen, it is always a pleasure to welcome to the program David Feldman. He is in many respects, he's a comedian, of course, and a writer, but also, you know, a lot of people look to him for sage advice and the host of the David Feldman Show. David, welcome to the program.
You okay?
No. No, I'm not.
Huh?
Why do you ask?
I don't know. I mean, the show seems kind of a bit of a downer today. I don't know.
You think it's a downer? Is that right?
I was listening to you and Alex talking, and it's like you're trying to scare people into staying home on election day.
No, I'm not trying to scare people from staying. I'm trying to convince people to go vote on election day.
It sounds, it's your show. I'm not going to tell you how to do your show, but it's your country, and
it's your country too, right? I mean, it's not just my country. It's your country too.
Yeah. And in my country, the way you win elections is you don't get people worked up. You calm them down. And you're just, wow. I don't know, man.
Well, wait a second. So how in your country?
Amateur move.
Wait. Amateur move?
You and Alex, amateur move. Yeah, amateur move.
Okay. Frankly. So you're arguing that the way to win.
I'm not arguing. Who said I came on the show and I wanted to talk about the election and you're saying I'm not arguing. I just think when you start telling people that the election won't be resolved by November 3rd, these flights of fantasy that you and Alex are having, why would anybody vote? Why would if you're not going to know who's going to win on November 30th, hey, let's go see the Yankees play. But you know what? We won't know who won until 3 months later. Yeah, let me go to that game. I'm going to go to that game. Jesus Christ, Sam.
Well, no, wait a second.
Seriously, man.
Wait a second. Now, David, now, please. Let me just add, like, first off, okay, so you're not arguing. You're postulating. All right? How's that?
I'm worried. I'm worried about you. Do you want Biden to win?
Yes, I do want Biden to win.
Me too.
Okay, so we're on the same page, and you think
that... And it was a big thing for me to come out in favor of Biden, because I'm a Bernie supporter. I'm a lefty from way back, before you were born. I was out in the streets.
I know.
Okay.
You're not that much older than me.
It was a big thing for me to hold my nose and say I'm voting for Joe Biden because I'm a lefty from way back.
No.
And I think you're like an agent provocateur. I think you're working for you and Corrine are working for the Republicans.
No, wait a second. Why would getting people like excited and, you know, maybe nervous energy or whatever it is, but get them out and say, basically, the house is on fire. You need to go bring buckets, as it were, or pull the hoses or whatever, you know, whatever the metaphor you want to use. Go there and keep the house from burning or blowing up. There's a gas tank in the basement. I mean, and we got to, you know, get the house, the fire out before it reaches there. Why would that be helping the Republicans? And why would the idea of like everybody calm down and just sort of take it like a slow, why would that be helping the Democrats? I don't understand.
Because that's what Joe Biden wants us to do. That's the brand. You're going off brand. If you're going to commit to Biden, and I know he wasn't your first choice and he wasn't my first choice, but the election is only a couple of weeks away. You know, it's the rubber is hitting the road and you're either going to stay on brand or not. So it sounds to me like you want it both ways, that, you know, you want to be like the big Bernie guy and rev everybody up. That's not what we're selling. We're selling Joe Biden.
So you're saying that just because Joe Biden's, you know, trying to like play it low key, that we should all be low key for him.
Exactly. A lot of people didn't vote for Bernie, and you know I was a Bernie supporter.
I know. My understanding is you're left from way back.
From way back, and a lot of people didn't vote for Bernie because of his supporters. You know, and he tried to calm us down, but we were so fervent, we turned off a lot of the electorate. And you and Corrine, you know, you do what you want. I'm telling you, you're pushing people away from Biden.
By saying go vote for Biden too vociferously.
Exactly. That's right. It's exactly right.
So if I said, in David Feldman's world, if I said like, you should support Biden, maybe vote, but if it's too inconvenient, don't worry about it. That would be more effective.
That's how I get laid.
That specifically?
Yeah. If I could still perform sexually, which I can no longer do.
No, of course. I think everyone's aware of that. Everybody's
yes.
Everybody took that as a hypothetical.
But 50 years ago, when I was in the game,
right,
I would play hard to get.
I see.
Now it's hard to get hard, but back then, it,
I wish you had
forget
said
I
that.
Said that.
Yeah, I will.
You too.
I don't
do
think
too.
I can.
Believe me.
I don't think I can.
Believe me.
I'm and trying to forget that.
But the genius. That let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
I know. I'm
let's
trying.
Move on. That's in the past. We never look back. It's not good for the country to look back. Move forward.
Move forward. Move forward.
Joe is a smart politician. He's a good man. Get on. And any politician can run for office and make promises he can't keep. Trump is doing that. He's still promising that stupid wall. That's why I'm proud of Joe. He's promising nothing. He's promising the American people nothing. No Medicare for all. No Medicare for all. No end to fracking. No end to perpetual war. That's how you run for office, Sam. You be honest with the American people and say nothing is going to fundamentally change if I'm elected. The American voter responds to that.
Well, I guess we're going to find out. I mean, to be fair, and this is not a fundamental change, Biden is planning to raise Social Security substantially. That's good. But yeah, that's
a little off brand. I don't think that's a smart move. I mean, I'm for it.
Right.
I don't think you should promise that and follow up on that. I think they could use that against him 4 years from now.
That's
but
right.
I'm for it. I'm for that. I just think it's a bad strategic move.
Strategically, you think it's bad for Biden to actually be supportive of anything because that could cause waves.
Blowback. It'll end up biting us in the ass.
Right.
If we do something like that.
Yeah. I mean, of course, because then people would
Here's
be,
the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, right now, they are forcibly sterilizing women in detention centers in Georgia, right? Now, I am against forced sterilization. You know that, right?
No, I mean, that often comes up with you, yeah.
Yeah. And it's Hitlerian. I know I've lost the argument. I brought up Hitler, but it's all Hitler was sterilizing people. You and Perrine think it's smart to bring that up now, to run against Trump by accusing him of, you know, sterilizing women against their will in detention centers, in ICE detention centers, right? You think Biden should bring that up during the debate, too, is that
Yeah,
right?
I do.
See? And then you come across as soft on crime. So you do not understand. This is, you got to lay back, man. You got to lay back, or we're going to blow it the same way we blew it 4 years ago. You got to lay back.
I'm sorry. Could you walk me through the thing where I'm against forced sterilization?
We all are, Sam. You're not holier. Don't get holier than thou on me.
Okay.
You and your purity. This is not, the elections aren't purity tests.
No, I understand. I understand. I understand what you're saying. But I just need you to walk me through the fact that we are all against forced sterilization. But for Joe Biden to articulate that would be perceived as soft on crime?
Exactly. And when people see rioting in the street, and tear gas, and all, you know, and Joe Biden is saying, hey, he's going to end forced sterilization of undocumented women, the voters are going to think, wait a second, then I'm not going to feel safe.
Right.
People feel safe. I've polled on this.
You have.
People feel safer, even though it's wrong, and I'm against this. You know that I've always been opposed to forced sterilization, right? You know that.
No, since day one, you have been against that. I will definitely concede that. I have never accused you of being pro-
Thank you.
Pro of that.
Okay.
All
it's
right.
just not smart. It's just don't bring it up now, especially with
okay.
people's.
So, concerns. All right. Well, David, I'm glad you mentioned that. There is a debate Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump, Joe Biden. If you were on the Joe Biden debate prep team, what would be the advice? I mean, part of that advice is don't bring up the forced sterilization because people are going to think you're soft on crime.
Yeah. Well, I think you have to outflank Trump. You have to be better than he is. You know, Michelle Obama said something that I'm going to get choked up here because whenever I think of the Obamas, I get, sorry. Hang on.
I'll give you a minute. Yeah. You all right?
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Whew.
You really miss those guys.
I miss them. And I, you know, thank God climate change isn't affecting that $14 million home they bought on Martha's Vineyard. You know, they bought that $14 million. And every time I hear of another hurricane, I'm thinking, please, God, spare Michelle and Barack's $14 million home on Martha's Vineyard. They've been through so much, and they never, ever abandoned us. They never abandoned us. Like, you know, those McDonald's workers who are striking to get $15 an hour?
Mm-hmm.
Michelle and Barack subscribe to the New York Times. They read it every day, and they know about that.
They're going full hog.
They read the New York Times, Michelle and Barack. So they know that McDonald's workers are fighting for $15 an hour. They've never abandoned the working people. They read about all these strikes. It's good to know that they know about it.
Yeah. I'm sure that's a big comfort for everybody involved.
Yeah, I mean, they can't possibly show up and march with the McDonald's workers because, you know, it's not presidential.
Right. People would be like, hey, what's that former president going and like putting on his soft shoes and walking, you know, with these union guys? That would people would right. be like, whoa. What's that about?
Right.
But what can we get back to?
I mean, they could go to Flint. I mean, they could go to Flint, Michigan, Michelle and Barack. They could like move to Flint, Michigan and draw attention to the ethnic cleansing of an entire city. But ex-presidents, that sets a bad precedent for this country.
Right.
It's good enough to know that they could have done that, but they're better than that.
Yes.
And that's how we as Democrats have to spin the debate. Don't give them the fight. You know, they're going to spin Tuesday night's debate. They're going to say Trump won. And they want us to say Trump was an embarrassment. He's a malignant narcissist. They want us to count all his lies. You know, they want a war room. That's what the Republicans want us to do. They want us to have that war room and just getting on top of every accusation, every lie that Donald Trump spews. That's what Trump wants us to do. Don't give him the fight.
So wait, so they what? Love, so what? So your advice is do not.
Go high. Go high.
Go high. Go high.
Go high. Yeah.
So your advice is to not call out any of the lies or any of the bad policies or right. any of that stuff.
Right. They want that. They want to own us. They want us to get upset. That's why people vote for Trump. They get off on people like you and Alex Perrine getting upset and worried about Donald Trump. They don't have policy. They just want to get you upset, and you're playing right into their hands, Sam, by getting upset about stuff, imaginary stuff.
But why do I care if they all get to say, ha, we own the libs, as it were? That's the euphemistic way of expressing, I think, what you're suggesting.
Yeah.
I don't care if they do that if they don't win the election.
Well, more people are going to vote for Trump the angrier you get at him.
So the best thing for me to do is just sit back and just chill about it.
Ignore him.
Ignore them.
Ignore them. Yeah.
And that, so that's if you were advising Joe Biden, you would just say, pretend like Trump's not there.
Yes. You have sons, don't you?
I have a son.
No, that's not what I heard.
I honestly don't know how to respond to that comment. I mean,
you know what I'm talking about. And
No.
It's okay. You just tell people release what little information you want to your audience about yourself and hide and behind that mask.
Yeah. Not 100% sure exactly what you're referring to.
No, you know what? I'm sorry I brought him up.
Brought up who?
Exactly.
All right.
Who?
So I have I have a son. And his name is not who.
Yes, who? Okay. The kid you adopted when your wife and you were honeymooning in China? Forget it.
Oh boy.
Yeah. See what? Listen. Let me tell you about elections. And you know, Corrine, and the New Republic. And I used to read him over at Salon.
Right.
And he thinks he's so smart.
Yeah.
He thinks he's so smart. Let me. You know, why is it people like me? You know, people who aren't journalists, who aren't professors, semi-literate comedians who see things, who understand me and Jimmy Dore. Why is it guys who are idiots who see things so clearly?
Well,
why does it take an idiot, a mouth-breathing troglodyte like myself, a guy whose knuckles scrape the ground when he walks?
Right.
I'm like 40% Neanderthal. Why does it take people like me to see things so clearly?
Do you think that you're sequencing this incorrectly? Maybe it's not that you are seeing things so clearly because you're a troglodyte, self-described. Maybe it's that
it's called humility. It's called humility, Sam.
Well, maybe you think things are clear because you're a troglodyte.
All right. Can I tell you how, you know, I can't get.
I mean, I'm putting that out there. I'm not making an accusation. I'm just suggesting an alternate theory.
Okay. Let's talk about the election. You know that Trump is president, right?
Yeah, I'm aware that Trump is president. Yeah.
Okay. And you know that there's great dissatisfaction in America, that people don't trust either party, right?
Correct.
They lost faith. Now, this is why Biden is smart. And you need to get on brand and not scare potential Biden supporters and the Democratic Party. How many people don't vote? There's a vast pool of Americans. Do you know the number of Americans who don't vote?
I mean, I would say probably around, I don't know, 100 million who are eligible to vote?
No. It's 100 million. It's 100 million.
I'm pretty sure that's what I just said, but go ahead.
It's 100 million, okay?
Yeah, 100 million.
Right. I don't want to quibble over this. I'm saying 100 million. We'll split the difference and say it's 100 million, okay?
Okay, because the difference...
Jesus. You're just picking a fight with me, man. Fine. 100 million. We'll round it off and say 100 million.
All right. Let's agree.
And you know why they...
Let's agree to agree.
Why don't they vote? They want things the way they are. If they wanted to change things, they would vote. They stay home on election day because they're fine with things. And those are the people Joe Biden is appealing to. It's genius. You don't even understand it. You're so busy talking to Alex Perrine. Joe is the real agent of change. He's saying Can you pay attention to me here?
I'm not paying attention to what you're saying. You're saying Joe is the real agent of change. I'm just waiting for the next part.
I know I'm not Alex Perrine, okay? I know I don't write for Salon.
You really? I never understood how deeply you resented Alex Perrine.
I don't resent him.
It sounds like it.
Look, this is what Joe's saying.
Okay.
As an agent of change, he's saying, if you don't want anything to change, vote for me, right? And I'll change things so we can go back to a time when nothing ever changed. That's how you get the 100 million people who don't vote to vote, because they stay home because they're fine with things. How do you animate 100 million people to get off their asses and vote when they're happy with the way things are? You promise them that nothing will change.
And then they'll come out to ensure that nothing changed. I mean, on some level.
Yes.
I mean, I guess, Donald Trump is doing that on some level, although he's saying we will return back to a time.
No. He's changing things, Trump. He's offering change.
He's offering change, right from where we are, but Biden is offering no change.
He's saying he's going to change things back to when there was no change. And that's what everybody misses about Obama. Hang on, I'm getting choked up. Whew.
I didn't realize how deeply your feelings for the Obamas were. Man. I had no idea.
Yeah. What I loved about Obama was the change was so imperceptible, you never noticed that we were arming the Saudi Arabians so they could commit war crimes in Yemen. You never noticed that Obama was killing unarmed American citizens with armed drones overseas. You didn't notice it.
Who had bad fathers? To be fair.
My kids.
No. I think it was Robert Gibbs had said that Al-Awlaki's son was killed because his dad was bad.
He had a bad father.
Yeah.
And I know what that's like to have a bad father. My kids tell me about that all the time.
David, let's talk
you
about
never
this.
Noticed.
Let's talk
it
about
was imperceptible. It was imperceptible change. That's what people want.
Listen, David, that may be the case. And if which case, then Joe Biden is. But you've touched on a couple of things that I think, like, you know, one, you've almost been brought to tears just at the mention of the Obamas, at your own mention of the Obamas. You talk about, issues, father issues. I know that you're headed to therapy later this afternoon.
You get upset when I bring up your illegitimate son, Ho, who you abandoned.
I don't have an illegitimate son. I'm not
you
upset.
And your wife adopted Ho.
I am not married.
You called me and you said, this was 15 years ago. You said, hey,
15 years ago,
15 years ago, you called me. And said, I adopted a kid. I can't keep him. My landlord is giving me a hard time. He's no longer cute. Can you take him off my hands? Otherwise I have to return him. Do you remember that?
No. In fact, I can't even imagine I would have had reason to call you 15 years ago.
And I had to come and I took the kid.
In a million years, if I was in duress, I don't think I would call you.
You blocked everything out. And I took Ho and he was scratching the couch. He wouldn't go in the box. You don't remember any of this?
No, I don't remember any of this.
Howling all night.
So, David, I mean, are things okay at home?
Things are fantastic.
What have you?
I don't go to it. Why do you think I would go to a shrink?
Honestly, I mean, I would think just the court mandate would be enough.
You can bring that up now.
Well, I mean, I think it's a public record, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm presenting on your show. I present, and you like put cracks in the facade, and I'm supposed. Yeah, I go to a shrink.
Well, there's
happy?
There's nothing. There's no shame in that.
Do you know what I'm suffering from? If you knew what I was suffering, there would be shame. And I didn't come on the show to talk about my. This is an ambush, quite frankly.
I don't mean to ambush you.
Oh, you're laughing. You think it's funny that I'm in pain?
No, I don't think it's funny that you're in pain. I don't think it's not funny either, but I don't think it's funny.
You think fake mental illness is a laughing matter?
Listen, I think your duress is mildly amusing.
A lot of people suffer from fake mental illness, Sam.
I was not aware of that.
It's a serious problem. A lot of people suffer from a fake mental illness that they use in interpersonal relationships to manipulate other people. And there was a time when we would laugh at people who faked a mental illness so they could make excuses for their bad behavior. But we've since learned that it's a serious issue and not to be trivialized.
So you're suggesting that in the past you have feigned a mental issue as a way of getting away with stuff in your relationships.
Yes.
And you have since understood that act of doing that is indicative of is in and of itself a serious mental issue.
No. I think there's a stigma associated with faking mental illness.
I was talking to it.
I'm sorry?
I'm sorry. When I said the word serious, my phone thought I was talking to it.
Oh, serious. The satellite radio.
No, not the radio. The I don't want to say the name of it on my phone, but the Siri on my phone.
Oh, Tom Cruise's daughter.
Not Tom Cruise's daughter. No, just my phone.
Tom Cruise's daughter
David,
is inside
David,
my phone.
Are you performing anywhere?
I can't anymore. I'm doing drive-ins.
Are you doing drive-ins? No.
Yeah.
Are you?
It's great. Yeah. I go, where are you from? And they go, read my effing license plate, you idiot. And then they, I'm doing good. I sweeten, the crowd doesn't know, but I sweeten the jokes with laughs. Well, I bring in geese and they kind of honk at my punchline. So it sounds like the, I'm quite frankly, I cannot believe you brought up my fake mental illness.
I'm sorry about that. I didn't realize that your fake mental illness was something that you were trying to keep under wraps.
Well, I mean
you don't do a very good job.
You stigmatize people with your smirk. I see that smirk on your face. I'd like to kiss it right off your face right now, the way you, that smirk.
Oh, I'm sorry you're not here. That's maybe next time. Maybe next time we could do this in the studio. Oh, but let me also wish you a happy new year.
That's a little premature, isn't it?
My understanding is that you are also Jewish, as I am, if I'm mistaken.
Is that a Kia, the Korean car that they honk when I'm performing at a drive-in?
That is the shofar that we have on the soundboard that just has a little more relevance this time of year.
Yeah. I don't play the Jewish card. I didn't bring it up. The audience, that was a secret that I'm Jewish. And not that I'm ashamed of being Jewish, but I just don't bring it up. And the audience doesn't know that I'm Jewish.
Well, David Feldman, I am sorry if I revealed to the audience that you were Jewish and that the audience didn't know. I just assumed. Just assumed.
Right. So now the secret's out. You reveal this once again. When I come on the show, and you tell everybody about my fake mental illness, and now they know that I'm Jewish.
Right.
How does this help my career?
I mean, really, honestly, I mean, is there any way to assess that it hurt your career? I mean, could I mean, I don't know. How does, you know, being exposed to the flu hurt, you know, someone who's passed away?
Oh, you're saying my career is dead?
No,
you're saying?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's hard to measure. It's hard to measure at this juncture because, of course, you can't go out and do stand-up.
Yeah.
Well, David, yeah. I got to tell you, this is... This has been great talking to you.
I might as well send you naked pictures of me that you can put on your show and laugh at my stretch marks.
I don't think I'm gonna wanna do that.
I don't know. You know, before I came on your show, my name was intact. I had a great reputation. Now I'm going to say goodbye to you, and the whole world knows that I'm Jewish and I suffer from fake mental illness. Let me go pick up the pieces of my life. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, David. It's always a pleasure. People should listen to your show, which I imagine will have to be revamped now based upon how the public perceives it. But it is the David Feldman Show, and it's a great show. So,
you know, I changed my name so nobody would know I was Jewish.
You changed your name to David Feldman so that no one would know you were Jewish.
Yes.
All right. Fair enough. Work out well?
Well, it was. I was flying undercover until you outed me. Well,
what was your name beforehand?
David Feldman with two N's at the end.
Two N's. Oh, all right.
Two N's.
Yeah. So you're spelling it the Gentile way, which is one N at the end of Feldman. All right, I understand.
I was.
Passing. I thought your name was something more like David. I'm a Jew.
God bless you.
Would be something that you would change it from to Feldman to sound like you were not Jewish. So.
Wow.
David, this has been a pleasure. We've got to do this again very soon.
Yes, when I have more things to lose, more things that I'm trying to keep secret that I want exposed in public, I'll be sure to book a segment on your show.
Well, it'll be my pleasure to help you with that endeavor. David Feldman, yes.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow, that was, it worked out very differently than I thought it would, folks. I don't know what to say, but it's thank God it's Friday. folks, just a reminder, it's your support that makes this program possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Come back in the fun half. We will have a Dan Crenshaw just released a 4-minute Avengers campaign video for Texas Republicans. That's something special. We have some other clips. We will take some of your phone calls. Not many. In fact, we'll put, you know, like if you're not on it now, there's no, well, how many callers do we have waiting? No, only 12. All right. We won't get to all those, but at least it's only 12. We will take your IMs. And just a reminder. Oh, on today's Noma Key show, the Noma Key show, which you can find on youtube.com. Dana Nomi, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing her last name. Oh, Dana Nomi Mills, Natalie Schur, Laura Gabby, are on, Nomi's show today, right at 3 PM. Check it out. The Noma Key show on youtube.com/the Noma Key show. And you can also check out, via Patreon, patreon.com/the Noma Key show. Don't forget AM Quickie. We've got it every morning, completely free. Sign up at amquickie.com. Also, got some big news, ladies and gentlemen. Can we pop this up on the screen? at shop.majorityreportradio.com. You wanted Carpenter pencils? We got Carpenter pencils. We have a set of four for $10. Is that even legal to sell them for the so cheaply?
Union made too.
These are union made. We only sell union made stuff, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
And all in the U.S. We've got the Posit pencil, the I'm losing it, bro pencil, straight Majority Report pencil, and the Left is Best pencil. And of course, you sharpen these apparently by using a knife. So I didn't know about that. But nevertheless, these are great if, do you know any carpenters? Do you know any people who work on a job site? Do you, or we're out in your office, right? You leave this pencil around. It's also good for kids who like to draw with these things. oh, we also have a Posit shirt too. There it is. Posit. You asked for it. You got it. Posit. Look at that. It's made out of cotton. And it's a Posit t-shirt. And left, the, you get a Majority Report logo right on the sleeve there. So go to town on those things. Enjoy. And don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Jamie, what's happening on the Antifada?
Sorry, I was just laughing, thinking about that time where Sean had a bunch of knives sent to the studio because we didn't have a buzzer in our apartment. He needed them for work. And you were like, oh, no, knives.
I mean, you know, when you get sent a bunch of knives at an office, like the work that we do, it's a little bit it's a little bit disturbing.
Oh, Sean. Good times. Yeah, I could see it from both sides. Well, I feel like I mean, that's turning into my catchphrase.
Yep. there you go. Getting knives at the office could be disturbing, or it could be, I mean, I suppose if it was a knife shop, it wouldn't be disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
Or
you know, someone who...
Knife target shop.
Or, yeah, someone who just, like, knows about the tools that construction workers use.
Yeah. Jamie, what else you got?
Right. So, speaking of Sean, me and Sean do a podcast called The Antifada. And this week on The Antifada, we had on Aaron Thorpe, a.k.a. Posadist Trap God on Twitter, to talk about all kinds of things. I really like this one. We talked about the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and how the left should interface with the Supreme Court. We talk about Killer Mike. He had some harsh words for him and the Black misleadership class. White people pretending to be Black. What's up with that? And why haven't the Space Comrades brought us communism yet? That's out now for free. Also today, we released a bonus. It's an episode of Vampire Castle, my little side project with Leslie Lee from Struggle Session, where we talk about vampire movies. And in this one, we talk about two very silly vampire movies set in the workplace. Vampire's Kiss, which is apparently Matt Binder's dad's favorite Nicolas Cage movie, and Bloodsucking Bastards. So that's out now. Patreon.com/TheAntifada. I also want to plug, I was on Kate Willett's podcast, Reply Guys, talking about socialist feminism and other related topics. And that's out now as well.
Matt, TMBS this week.
Yeah, on Tuesday we had Marshall Steinbaum on, economics professor at University of Utah, to talk about sectoral bargaining and how we should address labor law with regards to things like gig workers and contract laborers. And on twitch.tv/literaryhangover, I will be flying around probably the Great Lakes region. Maybe we'll be talking about some fur trade stuff at twitch.tv/literaryhangover this weekend.
That's great. I may check that out. Folks, quick break, fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy.
Alpha males are back. Back. And the alpha males are back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back. and the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danner?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck! Fucking reminder!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych! Fuck them! Fuck them!
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
A hell of a lot of bang. 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 A hell of a lot of bang.
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black. Black.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100.
Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them! Fuck them! Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back. Africans are black, black.
Come on. What? Come on. What? Come on. Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy, 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 pussy.